हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर
श्रीवासवि गौर
भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
पेज 58 श्लोक अनुसारेण समरी ऑफ वर्सेस 1 टू 24 The rainy season in Vrindavan, 25 to 31, Krishna's pastimes during the monsoon, 32 to 49, description of the autumn season. Verses 1 to 24, the rainy season in Vrindavan. Sukadev Goswami said, To the ladies of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys then related in full detail Krishna and Balaram's wonderful activities of delivering them from the forest fire and killing the demon Pralamba. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. The boys related to the women, Krishna rescuing them from the fire and Balaram killing Pralamba. The time order is a verse to show the relative importance of the two events. They told their mothers since they could tell them without any hesitation. Yes, because just the natural relationship, then the sons feel they can tell anything to the mother, discuss anything, because mother's taking on that mood of, of the parent. So then being in the masculine position, then you can say whatever you like. Right? With equals, generally it's pretty good, especially the closer it is, but sometimes you have to be careful. But when you get into the conjugal or into other aspects like that, you have to be more careful. Right, so they could just very, very nicely tell. Right? Sukadev Goswami continued. The older cowherd men and ladies were amazed to hear this account, and they concluded that Krishna and Balaram must be exalted demigods who appeared in Vrindavan.
Regarding this parental, that usually you can tell, is that the symptom of this particular rasa?
Generally.
In our circles also?
We always have to remember that our circles are always a reflection of those circles.
Perverted
means it's about ourselves instead of about Krishna. See, in its natural state, the reflected relationships here and the performance of the activities and duties will be basically exactly the same as in the spiritual world. So the perversion is the mood, because the mood is the actual activity. It means by the mood, then you perform an action. So getting, let's say, something to eat, the action is the same as getting something to offer to Krishna. So that's why then it looks the same, but it's perverted because it's not about Krishna, it's about ourselves. Does that make sense? So that's where then that difference comes in. But the form is the same. Sometimes it's thought that, no, the activities are different. But these activities, one will come down, especially if one comes from a vikarmic background, that basically you have to give up most all the important activities of the vikarma lifestyle to take up Krishna consciousness. So then one gets the idea it's completely different activities. Then mix that with the impersonal kind of concept, because our idea of impersonal, the attraction of the impersonal to the yon is the being relieved from pain, right? So therefore relationships in that generate pain, therefore then liberation means getting rid of relationships. Therefore, when we see that in the spiritual world they seemingly have anxieties in that, then we're kind of like, what's going on here, right? So So it's basically, those would be the two main difficulties. So even if one follows the karma properly, then still there's this difficulty of jnana getting in the way. But if you have vikarma, then it's more, right? Because it's just like, let's say you want to get together some, you know, in the modern culture, people get together, have a program, have a party. What's it going to be based on, right? Means, what's the proper food? Some exotic, non-vegetarian thing, right? What will be there? The drinks and other, will all be intoxication, right? Then illicit sex, then you push it as far as it can go, that it's socially acceptable, right? And then gambling, then that's just the standard, you know, kind of thing that they do, or frivolous sports, or, you understand? It's just very much the standard stuff when they get together. So then all the activities are aimed at that. So then if you remove that, then, you know, what's the purpose? You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty comes up is we're not used to perverted means. It looks exactly the same, just we've made it from Krishna-centric to ourselves being the center. So that's the perversion. Then you can pervert that and end up with all variety of things. You know, so what we're used to is a perversion of the perversion. You know, or the perversion of the perversion of the perversion. You know, like this. But you just call it the perverted reflection. Does that make sense? But otherwise, it's the same. It's the natural things. But depending upon the karma, depending upon, depending upon the karma, so therefore, what's the nature of the one's own nature, the nature of the others, and then how that actually works out. But it could work out, but you have to follow the Vedic principles for that to work out. Does that make sense? Because point is if what happens here, now they're going to relate these things, are they going to freak out? No. So therefore, if they don't freak out, you can tell them all kinds of stuff. It's natural to talk about it. So what would start causing this relationship to break down on this principle is whatever you say, the parents freak out. So therefore, then basically you just don't say anything. Does that make sense? So the point is if you can listen to anything because that's what's inspiring to them or what's disturbing them or whatever it is, it's there where their consciousness is at, and then try to see at how that can move forward in a positive way from their position. Then you can hear anything. Right? Does that make sense? Because it won't affect the relationship. So that's what's going on. So that is the natural position. Then we have it that, you know, how you say, everyone has issues and baggage and, you know, all kinds of other things to have. And then that just adds to, you know, how you say, the standard minefield of relationships that we try tiptoeing through, but most of the time we kind of step on a mine. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. But we also see that's with the boys. Girls may be slightly different because then there's more of a resonance there. So it may be more difficult with girls, but you have to be more open because it's about the parental aspect. The girl aspect tends to function on more of an equal than, you know, and then when the equal doesn't go so well, then we switch into the senior. But, you know, in other words, if the lady's out with her daughter and, you know, some person they meet or this or that asks if they're sisters, the mother's in ecstasy. The daughter feels like she's going to die. But whatever, the mother loves it. Now, as long as that's there, but now if there's anything comes where the daughter then acts more like an equal, then the mother will very quickly show how there she's not. You know, so it's a more delicate. Because with the mother and the son's always junior, no matter how old they are, what they are, what they do. It's just like that. So it's just set. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sorry?
I thought you could read my mind. I was thinking on this topic that boys may not necessarily trust to speak about everything to the mother because women are not good at keeping secrets. And, you know,
that's there, but generally I don't think they think that far because that means you have to be a little more conscious of consequences, which generally boys, especially the younger they are, there's no connection. Like you take the toy for fun, throw it against the wall, it breaks, and then you pick it up, hand it to the parents, say, fix it. You know, and you're just supposed to magically put it back together and then they can toss it against the wall again. They don't actually understand consequences. Like I remember once some boys were cleaning on the roof of the bathrooms. So it's not that high off the ground, but you know, it's like, 2 meters off the ground or something. So it's not so high, but it's still not so low. And they're having fun, and they start get into wrestling and all that like that, and then somebody falls off. And when they fell off and got hurt, the boy that fell off and the guy on the roof, they were shocked. Like, why would that happen? We were just having fun. They had no idea the consequence that you fall off something and that it can cause trouble. They were so shocked, you know. So they don't generally take it that far. Girls, yes, totally. You know, they know, because that's the point. Girls know girls. Just, you don't talk about it. Does that make sense? But boys generally don't know. With time, then they learn that. And they learn that through the school of hard knocks. You know, like that. But, yeah, yes.
Conjugal rasa is more complicated than parental rasa.
Yeah, there's more. That means parental rasa, there's very few minds in the field. And what do you call it? And they're generally quite systematic how they're laid out. But the conjugal rasa, then there's much more minds and they're not laid out in a proper way. And every time you go to the field, they change. The parent ones, you know, don't step there. But the conjugal ones, even though that time before that was a mind, now it's not. And the place you thought was safe is a mind. So.
Why is it so that people first get into so-called conjugal relations and then they become parents? Like, seemingly, it's a more difficult thing than first.
If you can handle the conjugal ras, the parental ras is easy. So you see, as those who can't handle the conjugal ras, they can't make that work, they can't make parental ras work either. Does that make sense? Yeah, because the point is if you're able to be that sensitive and to deal in that way, then you can relax and be a nice parent. But if you can't do there, then all that attention to detail that should be in the parental rasa, then you put into the conjugal rasa, you put into the parental rasa. So you try to control it more than you need to. Point, if you're already controlling the husband, you don't need to control the kid. Right? Does that make sense? If you're controlling something big, something small is not a big deal. But if you can't control what's big, then you try on the small. And then the small doesn't appreciate, though, then you end up with nothing. You know, then you try your friends, you try, you know, whatever it is. Does that make sense? So it's all connected.
Mm-hmm. In what sense you don't have to control the kid? Even though if you control the husband?
You don't feel the need. Emotional need to control the kid. Doesn't mean you don't control him. That's just things are supposed to work the way they're supposed to work. But you don't have that. You don't have to control the child to create one's security and identity, because the identity is already secure. So that's why the better the relationship is with the father, or it means with the husband, then the more relaxed and more accommodating one can be in the parental rasa. Does that make sense? Yeah, because like we said, that's the bigger picture.
That's why Indians, they have a better relationship with the kids, in a sense.
Like that. And it goes on so nicely that the kids don't even know what's happening. You know, if the parents are fighting, the kids never see it. They don't know it. They wouldn't have a clue. Like that. Well, in the West, generally, you want, you know, because the kids are important and you want to share everything, so they should also know that there's a problem. And so then that just creates in them an insecurity, because, see, it's for the adults, then means one can be married, one should be, therefore, then continue in that way. But if you decide not to, then technically that relationship can be broken off. It's a legalistic concept, right? Though in general, Prabhupada mentions once two people are married, then that relationship actually never disappears. It'll always be there. But it's just when it's not functioning. So that's why in the Vedic, then wouldn't be divorce, there'd just be separation. Because the separation is actually the same principle as divorce. You're just having nothing to do with each other. Because you can't, because one may question, say, no, it's a complete cut. So if it is a complete cut, then why is it then if one of your good friends decides, okay, now your husband's not no more your husband, and so now he's available, will you be cool with that? Not at all, because he's your guy that you rejected. He's not someone else's like that. He's still yours. You understand? That's how it works. So that's the underlying that's not known. But the point is in the Vedic understanding that's why they don't recommend divorce. Then there'll be much, much more care in the training of the children and the arrangement of the marriage. Well, nowadays there's no training of the kids really, and a marriage just happens. You know, just that one day, that magical moment, and everything else is history. And sometimes the history is real history, you know, so like that, you know. You know, Battle of Waterloo, right? Into the Valley of Death, Road to 600. Yeah, you know, like that. Yeah, so, yeah, and that means, and it brought down even somebody like Napoleon, right? So, yes. So, that's there. So that's why the Vedic system set up like that, is to ensure that it will go nicely. That's for the couple, because generally when we look at it from the modern context, marriage is just about the couple. You know, kids and houses and other things are just something you can argue over with the lawyers. You know, it's just, you know, an instrument to harass the other person more, right? So then, but now, let's look at it from the children's point of view. From the children's point of view, whether the parents are married or divorced, they're still their parents. So that's set in stone. You can't change that. So that's why in the Vedic system, then so much consideration was there. The modern concept, no, why do we have to follow all this? Because the adults think it's only about them. They forget that the children are actually people, and once you connect that there, then that creating that environment for their comfort. Because the point is that the parents divorce, then it's just about, yeah, mommy and daddy don't get along, and that it's not a matter of what's the kid, because the kid doesn't like it. But that's not at all a consideration. Maximum, okay, keep the marriage together till the kids are 18, and then after 18, then file for divorce. You know, okay, that's a little bit more, you know, in your modern culture kind of thing, like that. Does that make sense? But they still don't like it. So that's the difficulty, is because of this vikarmic kind of concept, the self-centered is more. That's why one won't see their relationships as strong. Because in the spiritual world, then they're solely centered on Krishna. And then everybody else, because they're all centered on Krishna, therefore the relationships work very nice, because everything's how you can connect to Krishna. When you come to the material world, when you're dealing, therefore, with the swargiya rasa, then it is about yourself, but it's always through the expression of the extended self. And so the consideration will be about the others because of their connection to you. You're not extending that consideration to people that don't have a connection. But still, it's about that connection and about that extension that's prominent. That makes the swargiya rasa. That's why then relationships go nicely. So you could say on the material platform, that's the best manifestation.
Still panamoic, would be?
No, because that's based on dharma. That'd be monamoic. Right. So then when it goes down to Because it's extended and you are performing your duties. Now, when it's just extended and you're not performing your duties, it becomes not scientific. Now, if you can keep it in that extended form, it will go better. Not as good as in the religious form, but it'll be better than if it's just self-centered. So it's in between, it's kind of hit or miss, depending upon if there is training in a background where there is a concept of proper family life and all that, then it works easier. Like if the parents, it means if the person who's getting married, their parents are still married, you know, then it makes it a lot easier because there's a concept that can work. But if when you get married, you know, your parents are already on the third or fourth, time around. But now it's working. Yeah. Most places in the world you say third time's a charm. Like in Hungary, I think you have to say fourth time's a charm. Right? You know? Like that. But whatever, three or four, depending upon how they go. Things like that. Because, yeah. Is that another topic altogether? So, then... then you have the concept that they have to stay together. And so then if something goes wrong, then you might ask them or other friends or relatives that have been also married the whole time. How do you do it when this happens like that? And they'll explain, yes, this comes up, but this is how you have to deal because the relationship's more important. But if the parents are broken up and this and that and everybody you know is like that, then when a problem comes, you don't ask anybody. You just talk to the lawyer. Right? You just ask the lawyer, how much is this going to cost? How much can I get from the other person? You know, and then how much of that do you need as a fee? Right? You know, like that. Yes. So therefore, that as we move away from the spiritual, then it becomes perverted. As we move away from the Vedic, then it becomes a perversion of the perversion. And then that can have so many combinations because then you're dealing with animal life. Right? So you have 8 million combinations of what it could be. Now, I don't know if I would want to speculate on, you know, what's protozoa family life or something, but it gets into animal life. So some are good. Like, let's say, lions, the mother is a good parent, the father's not at all. He has nothing to do with it. But the mother's a good parent. You know? Dogs, then, father's nothing to do with it, and the mother's an okay parent. Right? You know, cows, then they're you know, really the best parent on the mother's side. Father's side, not so much, but he's doing his duties. Right? But let's say you have something like elephants. Then it's not only are the parents good parents, but the whole herd are parents to the elephant. You know what I'm saying? So you get all these different kind of things. So does that make sense? So that's why it throws it into, you don't know what you're going to get because you have 8 million options. Right? But in human, then you know it will be in this form. And then as one's devotional, then it takes on, it becomes stronger and stronger. Because in the Vedic system, the perspective is supposed to be brahminical. And of brahminical, Vaishnava. Does that make sense? So as we identify outside of the brahminical, then it starts to have problems. Like that. And when, you know, and then if we can connect that to Vaishnav, that being the perfection, with time the brahminical will come. But in between the time of having that faith and having that brahminical mentality, then that secondary will have that much trouble. Does that make sense? So here we see is then a nice relationship because the Brajabasis are so absorbed in Krishna, so therefore anything about Krishna they're comfortable with, and so, you know, all these amazing things they just see them, like here they conclude that they must be demigods, like that. That's as high as they'll get, you know, like that. Before they were thinking that they become empowered or this or that, but they'll just conclude they're demigods. But they've taken birth there, and how? But they just feel themselves very fortunate, you know, because of the nice, loving relationships, so they're cool. It means it's standard, right? For every parent, their child dropped out of the heavenly planet, so it's good. But here, it's like, it's kind of like confirmed. you know, like that. One never has doubts. In other words, in the modern scenario, to everyone else, your kids dropped out of the heavenly plan, as though on your own private moments you might have doubts. And even you might have doubts that, did the babies get switched in the maternity ward? Yes.
We therefore conclude that the characters are very simple and that could be,
they're simple, but I would say more it would be pure. The simplicity is the purity. Not simplicity means that they're like dumb and dumber or something. Yes, so it's very refined. That's the Vedic thing is that it can be very simple, but it's very refined. It's not always caught, because the modern is simple means unrefined, complicated means refined. But in the Vedic, you can have simple and be refined, and simple and be unrefined. Right? And those could be your standard, you know, kind of thing. Okay. Next page, right? Okay, well, let's read that again. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The elder cowherd men and ladies were amazed to hear this account, and they concluded that Krishna and Balaram must be exalted demigods who had appeared in Vrindavan." Right? So they told the story about Krishna first because he saved all of them, and that was a bigger calamity. Well, then Balaram killed Palambasura, but it was just himself. Like that. So then, even though it's a very great thing, then it won't affect them as much. Does that make sense? So they'll tell the one about Krishna first, then the one about Balaram. Even though the one with Balaram happened first. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. "This verse describes the emotions of those who heard. Though young people also heard, the elders are especially... The elders are specifically mentioned since they experienced the greatest astonishment." Right, so there's also young people, means other siblings and other children will be there that weren't there. Like, let's say their sisters, you know, young sisters or young brothers or things like that. Then they may have heard, and it's amazing, but they're not as astonished as the elders. So that's why they're specifically mentioned. "The young gopis also had the same experience. They considered that Krishna and Balaram were two eminent devatas of some sort, but did not bother to identify which devatas they were." Right? You just think that there's something special, because it's not necessary. That's the point, is the attraction, the attachment. It's not necessary, the details. Like that. They're only important on a social platform, but as far as the relationship goes, in the ashram, it's not necessary.
Right? So, yeah. We see here.
Just got a bit of clockwork orange there. Nothing.
No, I'm saying that we see here that when the relationships are good, which is in the beginning,
yes,
nobody really cares for the details.
Yes.
But should have been cared.
Yes, should have cared for. But that's why then in the Vedic system, then parents and friends and advisors, they take care of arrangements for a marriage. Because they will get into detail. Right? The boy and girl, it's just they like, so it must be fabulous. That's just the conclusion. Like that. But parents and friends and that, they don't look like that. Like, how many times is all the friends say, "No, don't get involved, the guy's a rat bag," and this and that. But he's so nice, he smiles so nicely, and this and that. And so then they disregard, and then later on, then she'll say, "You're right." Right? Because the others, then, they don't have that covering of affection that an individual might have. So, therefore, the advice of everyone else is, actually, they'll get into it. If they know you nicely and they have that relationship with you, so it means those relationships have to be proper. So, in other words, persons with proper relationships can, therefore, properly arrange a marriage. But it's not that we have bad relationships and therefore then we can arrange a marriage. Because unless someone knows who you are and what's the nature and the culture, how would they know what to arrange? Does that make sense? So it goes back farther. So it's generational. That's why it takes time for culture to be established, because then once it's established in one generation, then it starts getting handed down, then it becomes very easy. So when what it means, at least minimum ideal is, you know, your grandparents are following the culture, right? Because then everybody you deal with all has the same value system. But if, and even better is it goes back generationally. You know, like Arjuna, he can talk about his four, you know, he's known as Oskayan of Bharata, or, you know, the Yadavas, because they're from down from Yayata, you know, Yadu, like this. They have that, so they know it's not only just who I know, but it's been like that for generations. That makes it even stronger. So that's the advantage you'll have in the, you know, your, say, your Indian, you know, subcontinent, and then the Oriental. Because the, at least the Chinese culture, it goes back thousands of years. You know, these two cultures are the only cultures on the planet left that you can trace the unchanged culture back 3, 4, 5,000 years. It means we know it goes back farther, but, you know, that's as far as digestibility goes. But every other culture, it's changed. The Romans, they were great, but now they're not Romans anymore, other than they live in Rome. They don't follow the same culture. They don't have the same values. They don't. So it's changed. Everywhere else has changed. Right? You know, it's like how you say before it was, you know, you caught the boar, and how did you catch the boar? Well, he was digging up truffles, so you have boar with truffles. Now you just have the truffles. They don't bother with the boar anymore. So the culture has completely changed. You understand? So that's the difficulty. So from that, then it makes it very easy that it should, something should be followed. That's why it's harder to give up. So the longer the tradition, then the more it tends to be fixed. So it controls the material better. But the only real control is spiritual. So that's why if you have the spiritual, then the benefits can all be gained, even though one doesn't have the material advantage. Is that what I'm saying? So that's there. And if we take it a step further on this this point, is until they've found someone that they feel actually is a good, compatriot's not the right word. Companion, yes. That's something with a C, right? Then they don't even let the person know about it. Because you could get attached and then it's the wrong person. So we see, like with Prabhupada, that his father had already checked out everything and it came down to there were two girls. Then he said you can choose between them. Right? So like that, because it didn't matter. Either one would be good. So whichever one is like that. So it has to be down to that. It's not that we'll check it out and then when we find one, then we'll start checking. No, you have to check first and then. So that means there's much more happening in the adult world. There's much that you have to be able to interact, be able to deal, because the point is marriage connects two families. So then you have to be comfortable and it has to be seen as that, okay, if it's a good match, then, you know, one should try to adjust for the things, not just, oh, they're in that, I don't like that person, so it's, you know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, if that consideration had been there, Romeo and Juliet might have worked out a little differently. But it didn't, because they were just about their families. They didn't care about actually their relationships. Does that make sense? So they were two families that could be together, right? It wasn't that one was kings and one were beggars or like this. They were equal, you know, families. They just were rivals because, you know, go back a few generations, somebody sold someone else some bad fish or something, and because of that, now they've hated each other ever since. You know, like that. That, yeah.
Yeah. Maharaj, like the Chinese culture, they especially emphasize on the worship of ancestors.
Yes.
But like our movement seems not to care about this side.
No, we totally care about it. We care about it more than they do.
Like, you know, like now that Chinese government, they want to revive Chinese culture. So they don't want to, you know.
So they're finding that Burberry is not working for them.
So they don't like people, you know, worship Indian god or something else like this. You know, they want everybody for the ancestors' culture.
Yeah, the ancestors' culture.
Yeah.
And where did the ancestors come from? The Prajapatis, where did the Prajapatis come from? Brahma, where did Brahma come from? From Krishna, where did, you know, does that make sense? You know, where did Garbhodakshaya Vishnu come from? Mahavishnu, where did he come from? Mahanarayan, where did he come from? Balaram, where did he come from? Krishna. So do we care about ancestors or not? Just we take it back a bit farther than they do.
Yeah,
right? And then the connection of that to us, then because that from that side it's not going to connect, but then from there then it comes down, then there's the from Brahma it comes down to Narada, then to Vyas, then to Madhva, and then down to Lord Chaitanya, Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, Lord Chaitanya, down through the six Goswamis, right, down through Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada. And then our connection to Srila Prabhupada through our guru. So we care about and know more about ancestors than they ever will.
We care about the spiritual ancestors.
Even on the material side, it still goes back to Krishna. So on both sides, it goes back. And of the two, the spiritual is more important. So he put the emphasis there. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, from our side, you know, generally the connection is back through Kasyapa, because his wives somehow or another, you know, Danu and Diti, then they're the mother of all the demons. So, you know we have connection there, but it's not as glorious as the spiritual connection. So when you worship Krishna, then that takes care of all the worship of the demigods and the forefathers, because forefathers are only one of the five that you have to worship. Right? Forefathers are one of them, demigods are another, the sages, the general populace like that, and the Brahmins. So you have to worship all five. So that's part of it. Now, in doing this, the forefathers are taken care of by worshiping Krishna, and then the devatas are taken care of by worshiping Krishna. Then the sages, then through the spiritual master in that line. And then the Brahmins that we take care of, and then that automatically takes care of, we worship Krishna, it takes care of all living entities. So by worshiping Krishna, it takes care of everyone, but then the consideration, because the spiritual connection, the material connection is taken care of, but we care about the spiritual. Therefore, the Shastras, the sages, you know, the Brahmins on that spiritual side is cultivated. But the material side is taken care of just by worshiping Krishna. All debts are paid. So we do it. It's just one has to know how. So you explain this and they'll understand it. You just take it all the way back. It all goes back.
They think their original ancestor is the Yellow King.
Yeah. That's fine. The Yellow King. Where did the Yellow King come from? He came from somewhere else. Where did he come from? Someone more west. Where's more west? That's going to be a culture that Chinese as Asians can relate to, right? Was he from London? No, he was from India. And how did that happen? Because when Parasaram made his tour, then he left. He got out, you know, he was smart enough to get out before Parasaram showed up. So the connection goes back like that, some millions of years. So we don't have any problem with that. So then from there, then you have the Brahminical culture. Then from that, then you have the Vaishnavas. From that, then you have worship of Vishnu. So it's still the same line. That make sense? You just have to explain these things. Because otherwise, why would it work so good unless it came from India? Yeah, you understand? So that's the whole point. Because you see, in the world, those from India and those from China, they do well all anywhere in the world. Anywhere they go, wherever the culture is, they do well. It doesn't matter. You can say, oh, only here or there. They do well in any of them because they're following they're the closest to following the older traditions. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why it works. And the other ones is so much speculation that therefore it doesn't work very good. You know, individuals it might work, but then you'll see if you study what they're doing, they're following closer to the old tradition. And if you check, it's generally how it goes back. Right? You know, these super rich families that have been rich for generations, why? Because they follow the old standards. They don't follow the new modern standards. That's why it works. So that's the thing. You know, you can function within the technique of the modern, but your values are that of the ancient. So it works. But those who have modern technique and modern values, it'll work for them very temporarily, if at all. So we do care about forefathers. You just have to know how much. That's why I say we care more. We take it farther back. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, your father's there, your grandfather's there. You pay attention to your father, but not the grandfather. Is that good?
Not good.
No. Okay. So therefore, who's the grandfather of the grandfather of the grandfather? So that's what Krishna says in the Gita. He's the grandfather of everybody. You know, our great-grandfather, right? Because mostly we know back to our grandfather. We don't know before that. So basically from great-grandfather on back is just one big blob. Right? So then Krishna is the origin of that. Is that something?
Yeah.
So then, you know, how can you worship these others without worshiping him? Is that...
Yeah, I mean, why don't we have some ceremonies?
We do. We have them every morning, called Mangalarti. And then after that, we have Guru Puja, and then Bhagavatam class. And so we're taking care. We offer obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. We respect the seniors. Right? So in your morning program, you're taking care of all the five debts. So we do it every day. How often is there in your tradition? You understand?
Yeah.
So you have to see is when you're dealing with the higher, it takes care of the lower. But you have to know how it's working. You can't just say, oh, we chant, we don't care for the rules. That's not good enough. Anybody can say that. So explain how we don't. So that's the thing. You explain it, why people won't appreciate it. Because otherwise, why does it work? Why does the Yellow King, why does it work? Because the point is now, let's look at it carefully. Now, there were people there in China before the Yellow King showed up, right? Because otherwise, if he showed up and it was empty, it was just like the Gobi Desert or something, then what's going to happen? Right? Sandstorm or, you know. The Yellow King had the best sandstorms. Yeah? Right? There were people. They couldn't hold it together. Right? So that means technically the generic Chinese system and culture wasn't strong enough to hold it together to make it something great. But with him coming, then they could pull it together. So in other words, what he was offering, then they could relate to. But it was better. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that means it has to be coming from the Vedic. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the Chinese is good in that it can appreciate the Vedic. The Western is not as good because it can't appreciate the Vedic. They go out of their way to try to make trouble for the Vedic. So that makes the Oriental culture superior to the Western culture. Simply because of the ability to appreciate the Vedic. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
So those aspects that are there, then that's the whole point. One has, that's why how you do things, then it has to be done according to the tradition. You know what I'm saying? You have a cultural revolution that removes the culture, then that's kind of going in reverse. If they had put it back to, no, we should have more of the local values, then it would have been stronger. Mm. Is that
what you're saying? Yeah. Chinese, you think Chinese culture is superior than the Indian culture?
That's because they haven't studied it. If you study, you'll see is that it's the origin. And that's why then Chinese has that superiority, you know, because of that. Because they have to remember, the Yellow Emperor is not indigenous. He wasn't local.
Yeah.
So. Does that make sense?
No.
So it's not incompatible. So that's why that's the superiority of it. You know? So the difference between the two is more political than. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. The young gopis also had the same experience. They considered that Krishna and Balaram were two eminent devatas of some sort, but did not bother to identify which devatas they were, since their hearts were overcome with prema for them as friends. So then they didn't worry about the details of that. Like the coward boys will think that they're devatas, but don't get into any detail. It doesn't matter. Like that. Also we see here is that the emphasis will always be put on the parental rasa. Like that. It's just a standard way of dealing. In the social environment, the emphasis is always on the parental. Sukadev Goswami continued, then the rainy season began, giving life and sustenance to all living beings, right? Because before it was summer, that's why they were having the pastimes under that big, big banyan tree, right? Because it was hot and everything. And the forest fire came because it was summer. The sky began to rumble with thunder, and lightning flashed on the horizon. The sky was then covered by dense blue clouds, accompanied by lightning and thunder. Thus the sky and its natural illumination were covered in the same way that the spirit soul is covered by the three modes of material nature. Okay, so now you'll be all these nice analogies, showing from some aspect of natural situation, and how that's comes, how that has, you say, the situation of the living entity in the material world. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, in India, after the scorching heat of the summer, the rainy season is very welcome. The clouds accumulating in the sky, covering the sun and the moon, become very pleasing to the people, and they expect rainfall at every moment. After summer, the advent of the rainy season is considered to be life-giving source for everyone. The thunder and occasional lightning are also pleasurable to the people. The symptoms of the rainy season may be compared to the symptoms of the living entities who are covered by the three modes of material nature. The unlimited sky is like the Supreme Brahman, and the tiny living entities are like the covered sky, or Brahman covered by the three modes of material nature. Originally, everyone is part and parcel of Brahman. The Supreme Brahman, or the unlimited sky, can never be covered by a cloud, but a portion of it can be covered. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are only an insignificant portion of the Supreme Lord. This portion is covered by the modes of material nature, and therefore the living entities are residing within this material world. The Brahmajyoti, the spiritual effulgence, is just like the sunshine. As the sunshine is full of molecular shining particles, so the Brahmajyoti is full of minute portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Out of that unlimited expansion of minute portions of the Supreme Lord, some are covered by the influence of material nature, whereas others are free. So like that is that it comes in. It's not, it's there, then the season comes. So the living entities are there, but some of them can become covered because of their not seeing Krishna in the proper form. And because of that, then they become covered by the modes of nature. Then by association, one can come out of that covering by the modes and then come back to the natural position of being transcendentally situated. So we see is that all living entities are situated in Brahman. But the difference is that some are attracted by the idea of being the enjoyer, so therefore then they drop down into the material position. It's still they're in Brahman, but they're covered by the modes of nature. While those living entities in the spiritual world, they're on that transcendental Brahman platform, but in a relationship with the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? So Brahman meaning the situation, that everything's situated in Brahman, because it's Krishna, and everything is Krishna, so everything is situated in Krishna. Yes? It's not that Brahman is living entities. No, living entities are situated in Brahman. Ramajyoti is its own entity, right? It's a feature of Krishna. It's not that the living entities make up the Brahman. That would be an idea that the jnani would be attached to, because then I am Brahman. But that's not. Brahman's Brahman, and we're a portion of Brahman that's situated in Brahman. Now, whether we understand that or not, that's another thing.
Father, why did you say that Aham Brahmasmi?
Because we're Brahman. But we have to understand there's variety in Brahman. Right? You have Brahman, you have the Brahmajyoti, you have Paramatma, you have Bhagavan. You have the living entities, you have the material world, you have the spiritual world. All these are all aspects of Brahman. You understand?
All the Brahma, aspect of Brahma.
Yeah.
The Brahma is the complete wholeness.
No, Brahman is the transcendental position of the Lord. So Krishna, the person, he is the supreme Brahman. And from him, all other aspects of Brahman are emanating. Sorry to put a dampener on the party there. You understand? He's the supreme Brahman. The supreme aspect of Brahman is the person. The impersonal is just a feature of the supreme person. Otherwise, what does everybody else how does everyone else situate themselves? You have to have a situation. The situation is generic. So that means Krishna has to be the Brahman. And then all the living entities, whether they're jivas or internal potency, then in that situation in Brahman, they can all therefore then worship the Lord. Because you have to have a place. You don't just float around in space and then hopefully that in your floating you come close enough to Krishna to offer the artik, if the lamp that's floating around the space you're able to catch, if you're close enough to catch a few wicks, if you're also close enough to catch some fire to light them. Right? So because that would be, how you say, sporadic devotional service, then it has to be based on something solid. So therefore everything's based on the Brahman. Everything's situated in Brahman. Right? Then within Brahman, then you have the forms and activities that are performed, and then that gives pleasure to Krishna and the devotees by their interaction in devotional service. So in other words, the Brahman is the lowest aspect of the Supreme Lord. Even though it may be the all-pervading aspect, it doesn't mean that that's the superior aspect. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, we have the, you know, as an example, we have the Yellow Emperor. Okay? Now, his influence spread throughout China. Right?
Yeah.
But who's more important, his influence or he himself?
He himself.
Yes, yeah, so that's the point. So Krishna, the person, is the source of Brahman. And so, therefore, as Brahman and Paramatma, he expands to take care of various things. So that his pastimes as a person can go on. Does that make sense? He just does it himself. We have to hire somebody. Does that make sense?
So actually Krishna is the complete wholeness.
Yeah. He is that's why he's called Parabrahman. And then from him extend all the other aspects of Brahman. Right? Because then expand, he has three features, and then he expands his energy. Right? Which has three different aspects. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
I mean, if Krishna is complete wholeness, then we should say that Brahma is an aspect of Krishna.
That's why we say it's an aspect. We probably use the word feature, but aspect will work also. That's why it says, what is it? Brahmano hi pratishtaham. That he is the basis of Brahman.
Yeah, but you say that Krishna is the supreme aspect of Brahma.
No, he's the supreme Brahman. And Brahmajyoti is an aspect of him. So they say, Didn't I say that?
Yeah.
So it's just because of the tendency towards Gyan, then we want to hear that Brahman is the supreme and that the person is an aspect of that. So even though we said it the other way around, we don't necessarily hear it that way. Because when I said it, the first statement, the look on your face was, really? You know, and then as I kept explaining, then the look kind of became more subdued. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is all these things are showing the different, means after this, then the next story is about the gopis. Right? So up to this point, we actually haven't seen about the interaction of the gopis, the mood of the gopis. Some hints here and there, but nothing much. So as we're being purified as we come up to here, and as we see that we have doubts as we come into these things, then now the ideas in here, the philosophical points will be presented, and we should become freed from these doubts. Then we can go farther into the past. Sponge. Yes? No? Very good. Kind of.
Can we say that Brahman is the basis of space?
The Brahman's the basis of space. Krishna is the basis of space.
Yeah, but that is taking far into to Krishna, but then coming down from Krishna, then...
Yes, you could say Brahman is space. Because anything that's impersonal, that's Brahman. Anything generic is Brahman. So space is generic, because you're not talking about any particular space. You know, ether is, earth is. That's why we say the 24 elements, it's all Brahman. It's come from there. Brahman has all these qualities, therefore then all these things can be manifest from Brahman. So the whole material, and then you take earth, you know, water, fire, air, ether, then you get this building. Right? It's a big building because there's lots of ether. Right? Does that make sense? You know, and then you need a suitable amount of earth. But if we could get a building this big, that's solid earth, let's say, like, how much space is inside one of the pyramids? Right? Not so much. Some of the crawl spaces are only 3 foot by 3 foot. Right? So it's a lot of earth it's taking up a lot of ether, but there's not much ether inside. You understand? So all these things are impersonal aspects. Then you get that from there. Now what you do with it, then that defines whether you're working on the Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan platform. It's the basis of everything, because that's how it works. The jnana shakti then takes care of the situations. The kriya takes care of the activities within those situations. And the icha takes care of Krishna's pleasure in those situations. Yeah. Jiva Goswami continued. No, Sukadeva Goswami continued. Where did we get Jiva Goswami?
You haven't completed.
I didn't complete?
Yeah, it's just like the Brahmajyoti is spiritual effulgence. It's just like the sunshine. Four lines down the back.
Out of that unlimited expansion of minute portions of the Supreme Lord, some are covered by the influence of material nature, whereas others are free. Sukadeva Goswami continued. With its rays, the sun had for 8 months drunk up the earth's wealth in the form of water. Now that the proper time had arrived, the sun began releasing that accumulated wealth. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. A government exacts various taxes from the citizens, such as income tax and sales tax, which the citizens are able to pay by their different material activities, agriculture, trade, industry, and so on. This taxation is compared to the sun's drawing water from the earth. When there is again need of water on the surface of the globe, the same sunshine converts the water into clouds and distributes it to all. The same sunshine converts the water into clouds and distributes it all over the globe. Similarly, the taxes collected by the government must be distributed to the people again, as educational work, public work, sanitation work, education. This is very essential for a good government. The government should not simply exact taxes for useless squandering. The tax collection must be utilized for the public welfare of the state. So we see is that the sun's been extracting water from the earth for 8 months, and now it all comes back. Because then what you see is at the end of the rainy season, how you know the rains are over, the clouds aren't dark anymore. When you have these light, kind of fluffy, white clouds, then the rains are over because the water's gone. Right? Then the sun starts extracting the water again, and then you start seeing, you know, as it goes on, the dark rain clouds and all that, and then again. Yeah. Yes.
Rainy season before the start, is considered to start at Chaturmasa or before the rainy season?
The Chaturmas is standard, where you see, like in Vrindavan, it starts with the Chaturmas. It means those 4 months. So Kartik is the last month of autumn in Vrindavan. But here in Bengal, because we're farther east, it starts earlier. And generally ends earlier, though this year it didn't so much. So it's shifted a bit here, but still... That's for how the weather will go, right? But as far as astrological effect, that will be the same no matter where you are on the planet. Does that make sense? You know, so it's Chaturmasya, let's say, in Australia, but it happens to be winter, right? But it's still Chaturmasya because the astrological influence is still there. Does that make sense? The weather influence is different, but the astrological is. That's why it's followed. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then the tax that's being exacted by the government is not for the government, it's for the government to use for the taking care of the citizens. That's what it's for. It's not that they just take money and then use it how they like. They're supposed to take money to give back. Because the point is, will the average person like to put money into the roads in front of his house?
No.
No. But if it's taken in taxes, then the government will put in the roads. So that's the whole thing. That's the difference in that everybody has an occupational duty. So the common person is able to take care of their family. But the safe environment and the facilities that all these families can function in, that has to be taken care of by the government. Right, and how do you know that what to do and what's proper? That's then the Brahmins. So by the direction of the Brahmins, then the Kshatriyas, they take care of the citizens, that is appropriate, and then the citizens, they do their activities that generate their money. But because they won't use it like that, it's just like here. Let us say, have we heard of the principle that let's say you're in a city in the west, okay, and you want to build a building on there. Are there government restrictions on how high it can be, how much percentage of the land it can take up, how close to the edge of the land it can be, all this kind of stuff? What kind of foundation, everything, right? You have to turn in the plans, you have to show the whole thing, they approve it, you can go ahead. Also, even how it looks, right? It has to be a vernacular that they appreciate. Then you can do, right? So then people follow that. And then if that is consistent, then you go to that place, it looks nice. Depending upon whether it's more built up or less built up, it will look nice. It'll be consistent. All the buildings will have a similar kind of mood. The spacings, everything will be nice. And so it's a pleasant environment, right? But now if you have an environment where there is no control, you know, just as a random example, Gornagar, then is there any connection between the vernacular of the buildings? No. What about this quality of construction? No. What about foundations? No. We even have buildings that are leaning like that. That means they didn't put enough into the foundation because foundations cost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, what about how much space the building takes on the land? No. It means in some houses, you need some sugar. You just reach out the window and that person from the next building can hand it to you. You know? It's like that. You know? So there's rules, but we won't follow the rules. Why? Because we want to get the maximum. You know, it's my land, and okay, you have to leave 3 feet on the edge of the land. We'll do that, but at the first floor, we'll put a 3-foot cantilever and take up all the space again. You know, and if our neighbor does that, then yeah. Yes? Yes. So you can see why also in the Vedic system they did courtyards, because then the outside of the building could be completely closed and you have all your light and everything on the inside. You don't have to look at your neighbors, you know. You don't have to hear them singing in the shower, you know, all that stuff, yeah.
Their phone conversation
and their kids and their this and their that. Yeah, so you can see it's an advantage. So even if you do want to take up more space, but it should be open on the inside, so that... Okay, so that's the point, is the people will not put into that. They expect the government to take care of it, so that's what the government does. That's why the occupation of Kshatriyas is to take care of those things that the people won't do themselves. Right? Or you wouldn't want them to do.
Marge, we see in Europe, or countries like First World, not all of them, but Europe specifically, they do follow those rules quite strictly.
Yes.
Can we say that that's their piety from...
Yes, piety? It's there, but also the European culture, which Varna is the prominent one, historically. Kshatriyas, yeah. And now Vaishyas have come up, but they try to, you know, enact things like that. So whatever will be more profit. That's why you see it goes down. Before it was, you had to have a particular vernacular because aesthetics was important. Nowadays it's less. Some care about it, so those who are in those positions, they'll do that. But others, they'll look at profit. And so when they look at more profit, you'll see less of this. And when they look at more, you know, tradition, aesthetics, and the general environment, then you'll see it's more. But it's more of a Kshatriya. It's originally a Kshatriya base, because that's the genes. The Prabhupada said is that, genes as in, nature, not in fabric. Yeah, not as in Levi's, yes. Does that mean there were two brothers? Levi and Levi. And one got into pants, one got into bread, but because they got mixed up, so then they pronounced it differently or something. Yeah. Because they're both spelled the same. Yeah. Okay. So, what were we talking about? Yes. That when Parasuram then had his pastime, then those that could escape the Kshatriyas, they fled towards Europe. That's why you see it. There's always just this fighting, you know, completely who's controlling what and society. The Shudras, you know, means in other words the foot soldiers and those kind of, they fled towards Africa. And then you see that they're also warring tribes. And the Vaishya means the Vaishya kings. They fled towards China. Really? So you see, Europe was good at fighting, not so much at economics, until they took everybody else's money. Then they did okay. Africa does good at fighting amongst each other, but not so much of the economics or holding it together. And then China, then they're very good at economics and very good at martial arts. So, you know, that's the background. And the Brahmins stayed in India because they didn't. Parasaram's not going to bother the Brahmins. So, yeah, I say.
Especially why Chinese are good at martial arts.
Because they were the Vaishya kings. So therefore the martial element is there. You know, so it means, in other words, genetically they can relate to it. But it's not until that, what is it, the Bodhi, not the Bodhisattva, that's the Buddha one. After the Bodhisattva. The Shaolin.
Alakam.
Huh?
Alakam.
He was the priest that came there, and then
Bodhidharma.
Bodhidharma, yeah. But he came from India. He was a South Indian prince.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure where it was. It Karnataka or Tamil, one of them. Yeah. Singapore was, I think, a Kerala prince. You know, at the time that would have been Tamil, so it's the same. So he then brought that in, but they could relate to it. You yeah. understand? So that's because of the past genealogy. Because as people, then Kashas are fallen Kshatriyas. That's why they can, you know, so easily take it up. And then you add in the Vaishya kings, and then you bring in Bodhidharma, you know, it all works out. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
yeah, so that's what it is. Also, Dravidians are fallen Kshatriyas. That's why they fight the Tamils in Sri Lanka, you just don't mess with them. They're just too violent, right? Yeah, so because it's just they were Kshatriyas, but they're not functioning in that capacity anymore. Same with the Kashas. So then they can, you know, have big organizations and stuff like that. Because like in Africa, it was more the Shudra, except for, you know, here like the Zulu, I think is the same. What was his name? Something Zulu. It was a name. He was the only one that brought it into a very big kind of empire. Shaka Zulu. Yeah. But that, otherwise, you don't really hear. There were some, but they were more connected with the North African, you know, so with the Arab group, like that. So that would have been more also. That. Yeah. So, yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then, where were we? Sukadeva Goswami. Oh, no, we're going to continue after the break.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Tai Gaura.